Escape the Mat Race with me, Lisa Staker, the Rebellious Coach. This podcast is all about empowering you to break free from the straitjacket of the traditional 9-to-5 and pursue a life of freedom, purpose, and fulfillment. If you're feeling stagnant and frustrated in your career and want to feel free and fulfilled, this podcast is here to reignite your passion for work and life by providing you with the resources and insights you need to take the leap and escape the rat race. So get ready to break free and start living life on your own terms.
So welcome to this week's episode of Escape the Rat Race. And it's a special episode this week because we're actually going to be doing a double header with talking to a very good gentleman that we're going to be speaking to, David Francis. And we're going to be carrying on the topic of time management and prioritisation. And the first of the part of this episode is going to be all about kind of finding out about David and what he does. And I will introduce him in a moment. And then next week, we're going to be talking a little bit more about time management techniques, because as you're going to find out, David is a very busy person and he's going to be ideally placed to give you those tips to be able to fit those things into your day that you never thought you had time to do. So without further ado, this is talking to Dave Francis, and he's lead officer for Music Partnership North and the leader of the opposition for the Green Party on South Tyneside Council. Now, that just makes me kind of feel kind of, oh, how do you fit it all in straight away? So over to you. Do you want to tell us a bit about what you do and how you got there?
Oh, wow. So what I do, so you've mentioned kind of two of the roles I have there, which is my day job, essentially, and then a community leadership role. And yes, you're right, it is busy. I prefer to use the word full. That sounds more positive. When you know, when you ask people how they are and they always say, oh, super busy. I like to say full. It just reframes it a little bit. But so the two roles, the day job, if you like, I since I've been in the world of work, I've worked in the field of music education. And had a few different roles in there, but my current role is I lead the music education hub for Northumberland and Newcastle. So I have there's a team of people that I work with, both in schools and out of schools, but the bulk of the workforce is going into schools and delivering music lessons, running groups and choirs and orchestras, doing workshops. We do work with external partners on large events and stuff like that. So lots of work with young people, children and young people, helping to unlock their potential through learning about music, essentially. So that's my day job. And how I got into that was, I always loved music as a child. The two things, like I had a life-changing year when I was growing up. We spent a year in the States because my dad was doing some research work over there, and we tagged along with him. And when I was going to school in the States, the two things I remember about it is we did some projects around Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King and people that really made change, large-scale change in their lifetime through the roles that they had. And it was also the place I saw a drum kit for the first time in person, which excited me a great deal. And those two things, that kind of community leadership strand and then the music strand, have kind of gone through. So I'd worked in music education and performing for a lot of years. But I feel like the first half of my working life happened by accident rather than by design. And it was kind of reactive and responsive. People would ask me, can you take on some students at such and such a school? Or people would phone me up and ask me if I was happy to do private lessons for them. And similarly, people would ring up. It was always phone calls back in the day rather than texts or emails. You know, people would ring up and say, can you play drums for such and such a band? And do all that kind of stuff. So I did a mixture of teaching and playing and writing some music and arranging some music and a little bit of kind of training and speaking stuff as well, connected to music education. But as I say, a lot of that was kind of by accident rather than by design. And I got to the point where I felt like I had a bit more to offer. I didn't feel like I was really expanding or growing, learning. It felt like kind of one day was much the same as the next. One year was much the same as the next. And I got to a stage where I thought, I've got more to offer than this. I don't feel I'm really living up to my full potential, both in music and in sort of wider, you know, serving the community stuff. And sometimes you read these things that talk about trying to find your purpose and all that kind of stuff. That I know there's that model of ikigai where it's you know, what you do well, what the world needs, what you can get paid for, all that kind of stuff. I didn't use that particular model, although I do think it's useful, but I do remember reading the prompt that says, think of a time when you were at your best. And I thought back to some of the things, some of the memories I had, and both in work and out of work, it was things around standing up for what I believed in. And there was a couple of specific examples there. And there was things around kind of speaking and communicating. And I guess leadership, and because even if you're just quote unquote going into a school and working with some young people learning to play the drums, you what that is a leadership role. You're leading them. And so I started to try and learn more skills basically, and get a bit broader in terms of my education. I'd always been somebody who loves learning, and I used to like practicing music and learning about music, but I started to just broaden that out and start to learn about some of those leadership skills. And what came along with that was stuff around prioritization and time management and all of the classic books that people will have heard of and read, you know, the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People and various other Stephen Covey books. All of the classics of kind of personal development literature, really. And I just kind of started to soak all of that up. And then in tandem with that, as I started to get into management and leadership in music education, I also felt that I wanted to do more to serve the local community and get involved in kind of little bits of volunteering and all that stuff. And how I got into the green politics part was through a friend of mine who was involved in the Green Party locally. And I learned that the local Greens here were organizing a beach clean event. And so I went along to that. And it felt great to just connect with similarly minded people who were doing a tangible thing where at the end of that hour and a half session, we could see the impact we've made in terms of largely kind of single use plastic stuff that had been on the beach that was now going to be taken away and disposed of properly. And that just felt like a really positive thing to do. And I just kind of got into it from there, and it built and developed from there. And I guess because I'd worked on some of those skills around, you know, strategic thinking and planning and prioritizing and leadership and all of that business, and that role kind of evolved within the local politics sphere. So I got elected in 2019. I was the first ever Green councillor in South Tyneside. And now that's been followed in successive years by colleagues being elected alongside me. And I now lead the Green group on the council. And because we're the second largest political group here, that makes us the formal opposition group. So as well as being somebody with a responsible role in my day job, I have that kind of leader of the opposition title in terms of the council here.
Yeah, and it's a brilliant kind of achievement, you know, a kind of accolade kind of for what you've done there. And kind of going back kind of your journey, it very much sounds like you've done something that a lot of people do, which is have that period of reflection, you know, that feeling that you're not quite achieving what you could achieve, and then investigate, and things seem to have blossomed from there. That kind of actually by kind of doing kind of the leadership and things, you've managed to kind of get a skill set, which is then be able to very useful within work. And she'd say any teaching role is a leadership role because you have people looking up to you, and it's an example, and it's empowering those kids to be able to go on and do things. It's not just all about telling, and then being able to do that outside of work as well and using those skills. And it's all too often we forget about all the skills that we've learned over the years of being in employment are so valuable. And you know, we can expand our brains and learn other things to actually apply to other things. And that you can also do it, you can see it the other way, where you get some people who are doing a lot of things outside work, say, well, I can't change my job because I haven't got, you know, a skill set of it. But actually, they've been, you know, they may have been a counselor, or they may have been kind of leading football teams or whatever outside and doing these leadership roles, which they can then bring into work as well. So it's, there's, you can see it going both worlds ways, but it's been lovely how you kind of been able to expand and kind of think about what you wanted and where you were most happy and what you enjoyed doing most, and then be able to apply it. And it's still within the same industry as such. So it's not like you've had to go, you know, I went from being an actuary to a coach. It's a very different jump, but you've managed to stay with, you know, within teaching and kind of to develop it. So it's kind of been that kind of a morphing of your career.
So I am still in teaching. I don't actually do very much hands-on teaching myself with children and young people, but it's kind of the next, you know, if the next step on the ladder, I suppose, is where I was at one time mentoring and teaching and coaching children, young people, I now have a team of people that are doing that who I'm, and now I see it as a big part of my role is to get the best out of them and help them develop their skills, and that then transfers down. So it's just, it enables me to have a wider impact than I could when I was just going into the schools I went into each week.
Yeah. And I'm sure what you learnt in from going into those schools each week is part of your leadership title, because you've seen it kind of on the, on the shop floor, as it were, about
Yes.
how to actually how it actually works. Because otherwise, there's a lot of things that you would it would be quite hard to kind of lead them with. And kind of you say you got there, you got the balance of being kind of the counsellor and kind of your role with your leadership role within the schools. I mean, what do you enjoy most about having those roles?
So I think what I enjoy most is just being able to have a wider, much wider impact than I ever could previously. I always really enjoyed in teaching where you have the kind of light bulb moments for people where they suddenly grasp something that they've been working on. And particularly when I had students that would then, as you mentioned, feel empowered to then go away and work on things individually. And it's always that moment where the person realizes that they are in control, not in complete control, but they're much more in control of their destiny, if you want to be all lofty about it. They're much more in control of their destiny than they previously realized. It's like, oh, if I go away and just work on this, I'll get better at it. It's not a fixed thing like I can play the drums or I can't, or I'm good at the piano or I'm not, or I can do sports or I can't. You start to see people realize that they've got the potential to improve themselves, and yeah, everyone's got different levels of, some people appear to pick up certain things quicker than others, and certainly people have varying interests. And when I was at school, I had zero interest in learning my times tables, for example. But when you find something that you gravitate towards and you enjoy, and then you realize that you've got the power within you to take the steps that will help you get better at it, that's a really kind of world expanding thing. And so when you see that happen with children and young people, that's amazing. And similarly, I love it when I see people that I work with, people in my team at work, when I see them getting better and developing their skills. And when I go in, I'll be doing a visit into a school this afternoon to see somebody teach. And I love just seeing the impact that our team has on children and young people. And that's across the board. Most of the work I do is in Northumberland, which is a very large county, and it's got a mixture of rural and urban and very wide range of kind of household incomes and all that sort of stuff. And there are some schools that our staff go into where the children's outside experiences are quite limited and quite small. And so if they're getting the chance to do a music project and perform in Durham Cathedral or go and see the Glass House, which is what was formerly called Sage Gateshead, which is a big, prestigious concert venue, that's an amazing thing. Some of those children have never been outside the town that they live in. So to have those opportunities is amazing. So that's the work side of thing. And then it's very similar in my role as a counsellor. One of the most rewarding things there is not the big picture politics stuff or party political stuff. It's just being able to help local people get problems resolved. So, responding to concerns that people have and being able to get things done for them is part of that. But I always see it as a big role is you want people to know that politics isn't just something that's done to them, it's something that they can do. And so empowering people in the local community to work together, and whether that's through a kind of friends of group or a local neighborhood litter picking team or whatever it is, helping people to see that they can help find the answers to their own problems. And again, that goes back to the teaching thing. That's the most rewarding moment, is when those students realize that they've got the much more power than they previously understood to change their future.
And as you say, that is a real life skill. It goes kind of to the growth mindset piece, which they're very,
Very much.
very much so in schools. And I think the more that we can kind of enable, kind of our empower our youngsters to be able to do that, and then it does go through to all the community and reinforcing it, because there is a tendency nowadays to be able to say, well, I'll just put it on social media and I'll complain about it, but not actually to go and do
Yes.
something about it, which you probably get a lot. I know we do around my area as well. They think, you know, if you complain about it, then someone else will sort it out. But actually empowering people to
Yeah.
say, actually, you can actually do it yourself. I think it is that satisfaction. So you get the satisfaction because it's been sorted out, but they've also, because they've had somebody involved in it. It's a lovely feeling.
It's getting the balance right, isn't it? So I would never want someone to feel like I was just saying to them, well, you sort it out. It's your problem, because that isn't the approach. But I do think that you can take the approach of complaining about something, and that's fine. There's a place for that. And if you were to ask my wife, I'm sure she would say she hears me do my fair share of complaining. But complaining, if you focus too much on the complaining side, I feel that that's a disempowering mindset to be in, because it then makes it feel like you're complaining about things out there that are being done to you, and that just drives your mind in a certain direction of, it's all the external stuff that's happening to me. Isn't that terrible? And the flip side of that is to start to think about what you can actually do to change those circumstances. And it's not always, it's not always the case that there isn't something terrible happen, because people go through all kinds of circumstances that are extremely challenging. I know I have, and probably anyone who listens to this will be able to reflect on things where, they've had no control over a thing that's happened to them. But I think in each of those moments, you then have, you can find choices that you could make that will stand a chance of improving your situation, or there are choices, and one of the choices is doing nothing, that will either keep you stuck in that situation or could even potentially make it worse. So for me, it's a big part of it is being intentional about how you respond to all of the stuff that life throws at you.
Yeah, that old thing about kind of like you can't control things, but you can control how you react. And
Yes.
that's, yeah.
There's a friend of mine who, he's a meditation teacher actually, and he has a great phrase. He just says, "Life will life you."
I like that.
I think that's really good. But yeah, then it's how we respond to those things, I think, is what defines our character.
Obviously, you're very busy doing this, and there's a lot of positives that are from doing kind of these two roles. I mean, what's been the downside of doing these two roles and managing them?
Yeah, so I think that's an interesting question. And I think one of the things that I've had to learn is how to manage my time. And particularly when you've got a couple of quite potentially demanding roles, and then you have other roles, maybe as a spouse or as a family member or as a parent or whatever it is. When you have lots of things going on, if you're not careful, you can fall into the trap sometimes of feeling like you're not doing very well at any of them, and feeling like you're letting people down on all fronts. And I've certainly been there in the past, trying to juggle all of the balls and keep all the plates spinning. So that is a downside. But I think there are ways, and I know we'll come to that, there are ways and strategies and tactics that you can use to get much better at that, so that you don't feel like that. And I think the downside, if it is a downside, is just that as your role expands, if you like, and as you're doing things that impact more people, just as you'll get more people giving you praise and support, you will also get more people giving you criticism and challenge. And a coach I worked with actually a couple of years ago used to call this new levels, new devils. And so, the as you get better, life then gives you greater challenges, and you can look at that as just part of the process. And these can be opportunities to then help you grow and develop your skills, if you choose to view them that way. And that is the challenge. And particularly, it's difficult to, if I look at my counselor role, if you like, but I think this applies in work as well, once you're in a leadership position, is there are always times when you have to make decisions that come across, that you come across in your day-to-day life. Some of those decisions are small, and some of them are large decisions with a big impact. And everyone has an opinion about what the right decision is. And in truth, often there is no right decision. There's just the least wrong decision that you can make with the information that you've got available to you at the time. And I think one of the key lessons that I learned is in those instances where you've got some people who will think you're a terrible human being if you do one thing, and a whole other people who think you're terrible if you do the opposite thing, all you can do then is do the thing that you genuinely believe to be the best possible option, given all of the information that you've got. And you then have to have the kind of courage of your convictions to be able to go with that and be able to explain to people why you've arrived at the decision you've arrived at. And of course, you know, letting people know that you've listened to the different opinions and you've considered the different options available and, you know, which choice has the best consequences or the least worst consequences. But at the end of the day, you have to have the courage to stand up and do what you believe is the right thing to do. And that can be difficult when you know you're going to get criticism. But as I say, there are times when you'll get criticism, whatever decision you make. And at the end of the day, that's when I think it's really important to get some clarity on, I guess, your core values and beliefs. And that gives you a framework for making those tough decisions.
Yeah, and that is part of being a leader. You are leading, you are making those decisions. I mean, I had a boss once who, led by committee, as I would call it, he wouldn't make a decision in the company unless all the senior managers agreed. And obviously, we had very different opinions. And it just felt as though all we wanted was just a decision to make, even if it's the wrong decision, which there's no such thing as a wrong decision. If it turned out to not be the right, you know, the most optimal, at least make it and just stick with it. And with the kind of leadership thing, that is just having the almost like the confidence to say, right, this is what we're going to go with. We're going to make the very best out of this decision because this is what we think is right at the time.
Yeah. And of course, being willing to be a little bit vulnerable and admit when something hasn't worked.
Yeah.
And then be prepared to look at what's happened and seek to learn from it afterwards.
Yeah. And having that, okay, yeah, I wasn't right on that, but so we're going to adjust. But at least that felt right. You should have said, I love the bit, you're kind of like, what's in your heart? What's your values? If you're going with that, then you're going to have that confidence to kind of take it through. Whereas if you're making a decision that's based on maybe someone else's values, you're never going to have that confidence with it. It's never going to, it's always going to feel wrong. Yeah. And then when you then have to justify it to others, it's going to make it very difficult because you'll be almost like trying to use other people's words.
Yes, and this will sound possibly a bit selfish, and I really don't mean it coming from that place. But ultimately, you've got to live with yourself for the rest of your life. You don't have to live with all those people that, whether they're the people that are supporting what you do or the ones that are criticizing you, they're not going to be in your head 24/7 for the rest of your days. Whereas you are. You know, the one person who sees and hears everything you do and say is you. And so ultimately, you've got to do the things that are going to make your future self proud rather than ashamed of the decisions that you've taken.
Yeah, very true. And kind of the people listening to this podcast, you know, a lot of them are maybe not feeling, you know, not feeling it with their jobs at the moment. They're a little bit unhappy, maybe feeling undervalued, unfulfilled. What piece of advice would you give to them?
I think if I had to give one piece of advice, it's to get really intentional and get clear on a couple of things. One of those is who's the person that you want to become? And then getting some clarity on what you want your life to look like. And part of that can be done by looking at all of the things that you don't want your life to look like and kind of flipping them to being the opposite of that. But yeah, I think it's the intention and identity part is huge. And I'm not a huge like raving fan of his or anything, but I remember years ago reading a book by Paul McKenna, and I thought of Paul McKenna as being like, he used to have a TV show where he would hypnotize people to do all sorts of daft stuff. But I know he's written a few sort of personal development books, and there's one of his books which was Change Your Life in 7 Days, and I read it years ago. I kind of forgot all about it. I didn't do the daily listening to the audio CD or any of that business. But when I moved house, probably about 10 years after I first read it, I was pulling some books off a bookshelf, and an index card fell out of that book. And one of the exercises, if I remember rightly, was around the kind of person you want to become. And linked to that, kind of some of the things that you want to have in your life. But I think the being comes before the getting and the having. And when I looked at the card of the stuff that I wanted to do and achieve, I'd done all of the things on the card, which at the time seemed like outlandish dreams, you know? And I realized, oh, actually, I remember doing the exercise where you visualize who you'll become. And I thought to myself, I think I kind of am that person now. Not that this is the finished article, because I'm still trying to learn and develop all of the time. But I think it was getting intentional on who I want to become and what I want my life to look like, and getting clarity over that. And then what followed from that for me was learning more than one skill. So I felt for a long time, well, I can play the drums, I can teach the drums, there's nothing else I can do, I'm kind of stuck in this role. But I realized that no, I can start to learn informally. You know, I wasn't taking courses or doing qualifications, but I just started to learn about leadership and management and strategy and goal setting and all of that stuff. And there's a story that I love, which I didn't know at the time, but I learned it since. And it's a story about, there's a guy, I think it's Darren Henley, I might be getting that wrong, who wrote a book called The Compound Effect. And one of his mentors was a guy called Jim Rohn, who I've listened to hundreds of hours of his stuff on audio. And apparently Darren Henley went to Jim Rohn and said he had some kind of lonely hearts type issue where he just couldn't find the right person for his life partner. He said, and I've made all the goals, I've done all the goal setting bit, and I've got the list of how old she'll be and what color her hair will be and what her job will be, what her educational background will be and all that stuff. And so the story goes, Jim Rohn said, well, you've made the wrong list. What you need to make is, fine if you've got that idea, but you need to make the list of who do you need to become that somebody like that would be interested in you. And I think of it a bit like that. And I've done that exercise with people in my team before, where I've said, okay, what's the perfect music tutor that you would love to have working for this organization? And then once you've got that big list, it's like, well, okay, so who do you need to be and who do we need to become as a team that somebody like that would really want to come and work for us and stay working for us once they're here? And it's again, it's flipping it from the external stuff that you don't have control over to taking it to something that you can actually do something about and you can make those changes happen. And I definitely feel that as you build and develop yourself as a person and you become somebody with more to offer, I guess. You've got more skills, you can have more impact, you develop your ability to work with other people, you develop your relationships. I don't really believe in the secret and law of attraction manifesting thing, but I do think that if what you put out into the world does affect how the world then interacts with you, and it affects how other people will treat you and how they will respond to the things that you do and say. So I always think like bringing it back to working on yourself. And so I don't know, this is a very long answer to a very simple question, but the one bit of advice I guess I would give is to invest in yourself and developing yourself. And you'll find that opportunities, when the opportunities come, you'll be much more prepared to take advantage of them.
Yeah, it's a brilliant piece of advice, because it is going back to there is so much in life you can't control.
Yeah.
So what you can Absolutely. Control is, say, how you react, how you kind of go out into the world. And then you're right, it's very much about how people will perceive you. If you go out with a certain attitude, they will say, actually, that person. I know when I was retraining to be a coach, I kind of had a huge imposter syndrome from kind of being in kind of the finance industry for so many years. And someone said to me, just go along to a networking event and don't mention where you've come from. And just say, do the complete going forward bit. This is who I am. I'm a coach and I do this. And it suddenly dropped. Oh, yes, I am. And it kind of gets, you know, you move into that role.
Yeah. And that's the identity piece, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was amazing how that little kind of change completely changed, you know, got rid of my imposter syndrome, because no, I am. And that's how they all perceive me.
Yeah. I think, I mean, everyone that I know and have spoken to about this, regardless of how successful they seem to be externally, gets times when they have those kind of imposter type of feelings. And I think I want to be really clear that when I talk about like focusing on what you can do and stuff happens, but that's not important, it's how you react. I really want to make clear I'm not talking about the kind of victim blaming thing when people don't feel empowered like that. It's and it can be difficult when you're really at rock bottom and somebody says, well, actually, it's you can do loads of stuff to change this. Like, that is not what you want to hear in those moments. And so it's getting that approach right when you're trying to help somebody. And I know, as you'll know through coaching, it's not about you being the savior who has all of the answers. It's about helping the person to draw from themselves what's right for them. And the person who's being coached is helping, you're helping them to find their own solutions, as opposed to just somebody who's going to come and rescue them, which then keeps them in that kind of disempowered mindset going forward. But I think the key thing is, and this very much goes back to the classroom days, is that the children, when I was teaching, they're like a mirror to me. And so if I go in and I'm tired and low energy and grumpy, and if I went into a room thinking, oh, these kids never practice, they never do any work, why aren't they better than they are, et cetera, et cetera. Before you even say a word, the children and young people are going to pick up on what you're giving off there, and they're going to respond to you in a certain way. And if you went into that room with a bit more optimism and enthusiasm, and help to see themselves better than they are, they're going to respond in a very different way. And I always think it comes down to that thing of, there are definitely things that I could do today, whether it's in my role as a music education lead, whether it's my role as a counselor, or whether it's in my interactions with my wife this evening. There are definitely things I can do that could make that each of those situations far worse. If I wanted to, I could definitely do things that would make all of those situations worse. And if that's true, it must be true that I can also go in and do things that will make those situations better.
And I think that would kind of fall into any sort of environment. Should say it's the home environment, it's the work environment. How you turn up really kind of can impact how other people interact with you.
Absolutely.
Now we're coming towards the end of this episode, and I always love to ask the question: if you could go into a time machine and go back and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Yeah, I think it would be that investing in yourself piece. And what that looked like to me when I was younger was very different to what it looks like now. I consciously carve out a block of time every day for learning and development. And I've done that for quite a while. And at one time, that looked like just getting a book, probably from a secondhand bookshop, and just learning that way. But over time, I got to the point where I was kind of enrolling in, courses, qualifications, self-funded. I mean, I've taken advantage of all of the learning opportunities that I can through my day job as well. But I've been willing to invest in financially invest in my own development as well. And whether that's, people are, seem happy enough to join gyms and pay money for stuff like that, and me too, or pay for a personal trainer. But people seem, for whatever reason, it's not quite as normalized to pay to do, to have coaching, for example, or be part of a mentoring program or something like that. But I've done all of those things. I've done qualifications and courses. I've had coaching. I've had, worked with mentors. Some of it paid and some of it not. But that investment in developing myself so that I can then do better in my roles, whatever they are, has always like paid back huge return on investment. And I think the time and energy you put into developing yourself is something that you won't regret, because it will just help you to do all of the things that you want to do better, and you will show up as a better version of you for the other people around you. So it can sound like a selfish thing, but it isn't, because it allows you to do much better in all the roles that you do where you're serving other people.
Brilliant advice there. So thank you ever so much, David, for today and kind of
No
sharing your
worries.
stories. Some absolute nuggets in there. And I look forward to speaking to you next week, where we'll be covering kind of some tips on time management. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Can't wait. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for today's episode of Escape the Rat Race. I hope you found it helpful and inspiring, and it has given you some ideas for how you can start taking action towards escaping the rat race to a life of freedom, purpose, and fulfillment. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast and leave a review on your favourite platform. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, feel free to reach out to me using the contact details in the notes to the podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Staker. Thank you again for listening, and I'll see you next time on Escape the Rat Race.